by the way, the Brooklyn Nets, they jump out to a 1-0 lead in their playoff series against the Philadelphia 76ers. And the Nets take home court advantage back. To talk about the Nets, we bring in Brian Lewis from the New York Post. Does a great job covering the team. Hey, Brian, how are you?
All right. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. All right, so let's start off with just this matchup against the Sixers, Brooklyn Nets, Philadelphia 76ers. Was this the best possible matchup that the Sixers could have gotten when you think of, it might have been the Toronto Raptors, it could have gone a few different ways. Do they match up well against the Sixers?
Oh, this is over, with all due respect to the Sixers, this is overwhelmingly the best matchup. I don't even think it's close. I think Milwaukee, and I've said this for quite some time, that Milwaukee is a horrible matchup for the Nets. And that's gone back, not just this year, but I mean going back 2-3 years, it's just a terrible matchup for them. And that's not just because of what Milwaukee did today, which was pretty impressive. Toronto, I think the Nets were quietly confident that they could give Toronto a series. But I think if you gave any of them any kind of truth serum, they would have readily admitted that this was the best matchup. They match up well against them. The Sixers have an issue with any team that can put multiple ball handlers, multiple guards on the floor that can attack off the dribble and get after you in the pick and roll. And the Nets have, for most of the season, the Nets have had two of them. Now that Caris LeVert is getting into form and getting back to his pre-injury form, they have three of them. So that's a poor matchup for Philadelphia.
So when I looked at this game, and to your point, the Nets have the three-headed monster in the backcourt of guys who can, dribble, drive, penetrate, also hit shots, all of that. When you look at the Sixers, what's the biggest problem that you see moving forward in this series as the Nets are going to look to exploit weaknesses there? Is it J.J. Redick and the fact that, yes, he can shoot, but he can't play defense? Is it Ben Simmons, who kind of has an opposite problem, which is that when he's on the court, he doesn't shoot and everybody knows it, so you don't have to play defense against him? Or is the biggest Nets advantage simply, they're with guys like Dinwiddie and LeVert, just the advantage of benches, the bench versus bench. What's the biggest advantage that the Nets have and that is the biggest problem for the Sixers?
The biggest problem for the Sixers, literally and figuratively, might just be Embiid's health. You don't know how healthy he is. You don't know how that knee is going to hold up. If we're discounting his health, then yes, I would say it's a given that the Nets bench is going to be not only superior but far superior to Philadelphia's bench. The same way I think it's a given, it's assumed that the Sixers starting five is going to be vastly superior to the Nets starting five. So I think those are things that both teams go into and say this is an assumption. Now the problem is for the Sixers, if you can't get Redick in an advantage, if you can't find a place to hide him defensively, and you can't hide McConnell defensively, then they have to be able to perform offensively. They'll need Tobias to hit threes. They'll need Redick to hit threes. If they're not doing that, then they're not offsetting the liabilities defensively.
You mentioned the Sixers in hitting threes, and obviously in game one, that's one number that jumps off the page. And if you watch the game, obviously you did, but some of our listeners, if they did or didn't, is the Sixers were 3 for 25 from, three-pointers. And that seems like just, you might not be good, but that's, epically hellacious and not necessarily sustainably, you got to hit more than that, 3 for 25. So In terms of, you know, is that one figure that we look at it and say, if the Sixers just shoot better from three-point land, that they close the gap and you know, they win this series? Or is that also about the way the Nets defended them?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, Mike Scott's not going to be 1-for-8 all the time. That's a given. And Redick will find his footing. That's also a given. But, yes, I think the way the Nets defended them, I think there have only been so many things that you can take away. Now, obviously, they don't want to give up 36 points to Jimmy Butler. But if you look and you say, all right, well, we need to take away certain things. They wanted to keep Ben Simmons out of the paint and, for the most part, on the perimeter. Right? They want to harass Redick on both ends. In other words, they want to defend him well, but they also want to make him defend and wear him out and get him in foul trouble. So, yeah, I mean, I think the game plan, for the most part, worked about as well as you could expect. You can't take away everything. But the things that they wanted to take away, if you look at the Sixers' four perimeter players, discounting Embiid and saying, all right, Butler, Harris, Redick, Simmons, we want to take away two of those four. That was their idea going in. They were successful at taking away two of those four. And then, you know, Embiid had his own issues.
Yeah, so, okay, talking about Embiid, any update or anything that you can tell us in terms of his health and how healthy? Do you expect him to be, you know, a little better, the same? What can we expect for Game 2 and the rest of the series?
Well, I mean, he's listed as questionable. I don't think anybody's really buying the questionable part any more than really you bought the doubtful part. I think the assumption is that he's going to play. He didn't practice. He was getting treatment today at practice. So I think the assumption is that he'll play, just the same way the assumption is that Ed Davis and Jared Dudley, who are both listed as questionable, are going to play. Whether he'll be 100%, I would assume that he won't be. I don't know when you'll see him 100%. I assume he'll play. I assume he'll start. I assume he'll be limited somewhat in what he can do, and he'll be playing through pain. The question is, do the Nets make him work? You know, can they draw him out and, you know, have him working on screens and have him moving side to side and laterally? Can they make him do all of those things, or do they let him kind of play in a phone booth and beat up Jared Allen? That's the question.
You mentioned Jared Dudley before, and I think that if you had told Nets fans at the time when they got Jared Dudley that the team would not only be in the playoffs, but come playoff time, Jared Dudley would be out there playing 28 important minutes and be, you know, kind of a major factor in the game, I don't know if they would have believed you, and that Josh Allen would play only 10 minutes against Embiid. You know, how surprised have you been about Jared Dudley, and what are people who don't see and watch the team every single game in, game out, or come to practice or around the locker room, what's everybody missing about Jared Dudley?
If you had told me that in camp, I would have been shocked. If you had asked me that a month ago or 2 months ago or even 3 months ago, no, I wouldn't have been surprised. He's one of those players that you have to watch to appreciate. He's smart. He studies the daylights out of film. He understands guys' tendencies on the court, and that's underrated. I mean, he looks and he says, okay, he realizes that when Simmons Euro steps, he goes in this direction after that. He understands. I mean, even the players on the Nets, even guys like Damari Carroll, who's not the youngest guy, even still refer to Jared Dudley as grandpa. But they respect him because he knows what he's talking about. And these are the kind of things that come through. Part of the reason the Nets had a 14-game improvement from last season isn't just the development of D'Angelo Russell, although that was huge. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that they have better veteran leadership. I mean, Damari basically had to be the lone grown-up in the room last year. It's very difficult for Jeremy Lin to be the grown-up in the room when he's 3,000 miles away in Vancouver.
Right.
So the fact that they have three guys who all lead in very different ways, but can provide some savvy and can calm them when they need to be calmed on the court and can help them in the locker room and can help them in film sessions, that's valuable. And Dudley is one of those three.
Talking to you, Brian Lewis from the Post, about the Nets, big game one win, and contrast the game ones that we saw from D'Angelo Russell. 26 points, has a tough first half, but comes back and has a very strong second half, you know, offensively. And then you have Ben Simmons, who's getting booed by his home crowd, and seems to be, maybe that seems to be in his head a little bit. Here are two guys, you know, if we thought about where they both were a year or two ago, it feels pretty shocking to me to see where they're at right now.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, obviously, Russell has taken a huge quantum leap forward, both in terms of his physique and working on his body and working on his game, and also, frankly, in terms of maturity. He's taken a quantum leap forward in terms of that. And yes, you're right. It is clearly in Simmons' head. I mean, at least Joel Embiid has tried to at least say some of the right things
right.
with regards to the fans. He may have failed, but at least he tried to say the right thing. Simmons, clearly it's bothering him and irritating him and in his head. And that's probably not a good look going forward. That's not going to engender any kind of goodwill back and forth with a fan base that, you know, frankly, can be, you know, kind of salty.
Salty is a nice way of putting it. So real quick, just a few seconds before I let you go, will the Sixers actually then maybe benefit from not playing at home?
Well, the weird thing is, I mean, if you look at their home and road splits, I mean, I think
they were a much better home team. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think they might be... Their net rating might be the third most improved team at home. In other words, their splits from home and road.
Yeah.
So they've relied on a huge home court advantage all year. So normally I would say no. There's no way that they should be benefiting from being on the road. You know, the Nets have played fairly well on the road, which I guess is, you know, a nice way of saying they haven't had a great home court advantage over the span of the season. The Sixers have.
Yeah.
So, I think they can turn this.
All right.
The Sixers in game two.
Okay.
But, you know, yeah.
We'll see. Hey, Brian Lewis, really appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Sure. Anytime.